live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
Hey guys, you've heard of the Young Turks podcast because you're listening to it right now. But make sure that you subscribe and give it a 5-star rating if you like it. Thank you for listening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Young Turks. I'm
Look who's here!
Hey, what's up?
You've been gone 6 months.
I've been gone for a week.
Felt like 6 months.
It was a much needed break. This was an actual, a few people tweeted to me and they're like, weren't you just on vacation? Mm-hmm. Because I was in Munich on a work trip, so that was not a vacation. This past week I was on vacation, it was nice.
And it was vacation-y?
It was, I was on a cruise, which means that you don't have
a cruise. Okay.
Unless you pay for it, you don't really have access to Wi-Fi. So you're forced to be unplugged.
What do you mean?
You have to pay for Wi-Fi and it's actually pretty expensive.
On like a major cruise, they don't include Wi-Fi?
No, of course not.
What year is it?
You know what, in the post game, I actually wanna talk about how cruises are, it's supposed to be an all-inclusive thing, but they purposely make the food, the free food or the included food on the cruise so unbearable and disgusting that you want to spend extra money to go to like the specialty restaurants that aren't gross.
I heard the buffet was good.
No,
I don't know anything about cruises.
We'll talk about that later in the post-game.
I think it should be the first hour. I'm kidding. I'm just glad to have you back.
I mean, it's not like there's any big political news today, right, guys?
Tomorrow's nothing.
Well, actually, speaking of tomorrow, and I have some announcements to make. I'm going to start off with what we're going to be doing tomorrow for Super Tuesday. For Super Tuesday, TYT, of course, will have special coverage throughout the day. We have a panel of heavy hitters. Cenk will join us somehow.
I don't know how
that's gonna work. I'll be there, John Iadarola, J.R. Jackson, Ben Mankiewicz, Ida Rodriguez, and Francesca Fiorentini will also join us throughout the night. It'll be hopefully a great night. Now, there are some early voting results in already that show that, you know, some people are doing really well, people that we really like. I don't know if they're the early voting results, but the polling out of states like California, let me be clear.
I thought you had like the scoop.
But just to give you details on when our special coverage will begin, you can tune in starting 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific on tyt.com/live. And I'm sure we're gonna go late into the night, so make sure you check that out. We'll also be available on various platforms, including Pluto TV, Zumo, Roku, YouTube TV, Twitch, we're on Twitch, wow. Comcast,
Xfinity. That's new since you since you left.
Man, we're all over the place. And then one other quick announcement, you should probably do this announcement for yourself, John. You're gonna be on the Politicon podcast soon.
I am.
Yes.
It's gonna be so much fun.
So Politicon is known for its debates and this podcast is all about debates. So you're gonna be on with Adam Carolla, Lauren Chen, Katie Hill, and the host is Clay Aiken. And so this is gonna be a day after Super Tuesday. So March 4th, yeah, make sure you check that out.
Yeah, so that should be fun. You know the thing that I guarantee, I bet Politicon is like, you know what? Let's get 2 and 2. Yeah, so it's balanced.
Yeah, you and Katie Hill, you're exactly the same.
Yeah, we're gonna come on the stage from opposite sides and like run and high five. It's gonna be awesome.
It's gonna be fascinating. So make sure you guys check that out. You can learn more details about it by going to tyt.com/notice.
Yes.
All right, well, let's move on to some of the big stories today. Amy Klobuchar has officially suspended her campaign. This was a bit of a surprise, especially given the fact that Pete Buttigieg suspended his campaign over the weekend. But it's becoming increasingly clear that some of these moderate candidates are deciding to suspend their campaigns ahead of Super Tuesday in order to solidify support for Joe Biden. And also, of course, to screw over Bernie Sanders. Let's just call it what it is. Now, let me give you the details on what CNN reported. The Klobuchar campaign confirmed that the senator is flying to Dallas to join the former vice president at his rally, where she will suspend her campaign and give her endorsement on the eve of Super Tuesday. Now, there was a very brief bump in Klobuchar's campaign that was unexpected. And since it was unexpected, they were unprepared and disorganized for capitalizing and using it to their advantage. So for instance, the high point of Klobuchar's campaign came in mid-February when a strong debate days before the New Hampshire primary led to a third place finish in the state. But a lack of organization on the ground in Nevada and South Carolina, along with the senator's inability to win over Latino and Black voters, ultimately stalled her candidacy. Maybe she had a difficult time, you know, reaching out to Black and Latino voters because she was so hyper focused on the Midwest. That was all she would talk about all the time.
Mostly just snowstorms too, but.
Yes, so look, this is obviously to help Biden, and there really was no clear path to victory for Amy Klobuchar. So I think that this makes sense, especially when you consider the centrist agenda. But I wanted to get your thoughts
on it. Well, look, so so we had three dropouts in just the past like 3 or 4 days. I think Tom Steyer probably felt, I gave it my best shot. This is really the only place I saw myself competing anyway, and clearly this thing isn't, you know, it isn't gonna work out. So what have I lost? I only spent, you know, $230 million. So why not drop out? That's fine. With Buttigieg and I almost said Warren. Cross your fingers. Klobuchar.
Exactly.
It's interesting. So I am right there with you and everyone that feels like this is obviously in some fashion to some degree coordinated, clearly. Mm-hmm. At the same time though, they should drop out. They don't have a chance. So like I can look at it as someone who looks at the likely effect on Bernie Sanders and says, sucks that they're like, you know, sort of aligning against him. But if it wasn't to support Biden, there would still be no reason for them to still be in the race.
So I agree with you for the most part, but there's one caveat. And my caveat is, I would have preferred for them to drop out after Super Tuesday. Because this is, look, if they genuinely care about beating Donald Trump, first of all, I don't believe them. I think they're disingenuous about it. And I know I'll probably get some heat for saying that. Because if you genuinely wanted to beat Donald Trump, you would not assist Biden in becoming the nominee in the Democratic Party. Like Biden is not equipped to beat Trump. I'm sorry. The polls might say one thing, but we all saw how he performed on that debate stage. Later in the show, you're gonna see a video of him getting interviewed by Chris Wallace where he forgets Chris Wallace's name. He's gonna be, if he wins the nomination, he's gonna be on that debate stage with Donald Trump, who's not some genius or anything, but he's the kind of person who hits below the belt and he hits hard. And Biden has a hard time even figuring out which state he's campaigning in on any given day. So I'm concerned about that. So they keep saying like, no, we gotta make sure that Bernie isn't the nominee because then Trump's gonna get reelected. Based on what though? I mean, he has an economic message that resonates across the board, across political ideologies, right? He is mentally sharp. He knows what he's talking about.
Which is nice to have.
Which is incredibly important to have. And look, I'm not saying this to just simply insult Biden, but we've seen a pretty sharp decline in his cognitive, you know, ability on the debate stage.
It's called memory. It's called like up here sometimes. Yeah, he seems to have declined. And I've been saying for weeks now, you know, I like that they're I get that they were sticking around to potentially have it handed to them after a brokered convention. But I liked it because it did increase the chance that all of the centrists would fall below the 15% eligibility mark. And so the opposite of that is, and then now that they've left out, yeah, that does hurt Bernie Sanders. But it also provides a less muddied, sort of muddled field. Now the debates will be the people who theoretically have a chance. And no offense, but from the numbers, also Warren, because numbers wise, it's not there for her either. And so perhaps it'll be easier for him to make the case based on policy when the time on the debate stage isn't being split amongst a whole bunch of people that have no business being up there in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, we still have debates left, and I think that this is a good opportunity for Bernie to show. I mean, he's already shown many voters, myself included, that he is the best candidate to beat Donald Trump. But I think that a lengthier time for him to give his answers and to really, like, you know, provide the evidence and the proof for why he's a better candidate will work out for him. Mm-hmm. And especially when you can just compare him to Biden and there's no other noise on that debate stage. Warren, I think, should drop out. I know that's another thing that people get really heated about, but she is not doing well in the polls. And I'm not even saying that because I think that her coalition is similar to Bernie Sanders's. They actually have very different supporters. So some portion of her supporters, I'm not exactly sure how many of them are going to support Biden, right? But there are some progressives who still think that she has a decent shot, who like her policies, who maybe don't pay close attention to some of the things that have been going on. I think that they would go to Bernie. So I see why people are pushing her to drop out, because it would help his campaign a little bit. But look, I think the thing that's gonna help him the most is his economic message. And as long as he sticks to that and doesn't let people push him in, you know, some of the identity politics nonsense that we've seen with some of these candidates, I think he's gonna do fine.
I think I will say a version of what I've said now several times, including at Saturday's South Carolina coverage, to Elizabeth Warren or anyone who's close to her and can deliver a message. She really does have to drop out. And I swear to you, I'm not saying that necessarily in the flippant sort of way that a lot of people are saying it online. I don't despise Elizabeth Warren. In fact, I get attacked for the fact that I don't despise Elizabeth Warren. Anyone who doesn't does get attacked for her. But here's the thing, she still either thinks maybe there's a very small chance that at a debate or something, she rises like a phoenix and can start winning races. Maybe there's a chance of that. Up until now, she's never placed above third. So it seems kind of unlikely at this point. She has high name recognition. Everybody knows who she is. Mm-hmm. Or alternatively, she can work her way through to the convention and have it handed to her. That is even less likely today than it was a couple of days ago before these people dropped out. Because if things go the way it looks like things are gonna go without any major changes, what's gonna end up happening is we're gonna enter the convention with Bernie Sanders with the most delegates, Biden a couple behind him, Bloomberg a couple hundred behind him, and Warren even farther behind. Warren will have a few hundred, sure, but they're not gonna hand it to her if they can hand it to Biden and at least say, well, he won some states, didn't he? And he had more delegates than Warren did. And they like Biden more than they like Warren anyway. There is no reason that they would give it to her. And that means that unless at the last possible moment she hands her delegates over to Bernie to put him over the thing, the only effect she's having is making it more likely that we have a contested convention that she will never win, and more likely that the end result of it will be a Biden nomination. And from everything that she's said through this campaign and through her career, there is no reason that she should be working towards that goal.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I don't know what her play is moving forward, but if she chooses to stay in this race. I mean, she's attacked Bernie in incredibly dishonest ways, and it hasn't helped her campaign at all. I don't know if she's angling to possibly work with Biden in the future, but if she is planning on doing that, it doesn't make any sense considering her whole political career was built on fighting Joe Biden and his bankruptcy bill. Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff with Warren is frustrating. And what's even more frustrating is how the Democratic Party is you know, working together in every conceivable way to defeat the one candidate who has the best shot at beating Trump, which makes it abundantly clear to me that they don't actually care about beating Trump, but they do care about preserving their power and their ability to fundraise. And that's really what it boils down to. That's my analysis on it, and that's what it appears to be. It's just amazing how far they're willing to go against the will of the people in order to, you know, put in a candidate that they're comfortable with. Yeah. Someone who's gonna keep things the way that they are, and that's what Biden has said very clearly to his donors, and who isn't going to stir the pot in any way. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One final thing on Klobuchar. After witnessing the last few debates, it is nice that she lasted longer than Pete Buttigieg, at least, just in terms of their personal feud. I'm not saying anything about my views of either of them, but like, you know that when he dropped, like they probably were being approached, like, okay, we're gonna need both of you to drop out. And she must have been thinking, not until he does.
Totally. So you know what, why don't we get to that story? Pete Buttigieg is up.
The truth is that the path has narrowed to a close for our candidacy, if not for our cause.
That's Pete Buttigieg announcing the end of his presidential campaign. When I say end, I really mean that he has suspended his presidential campaign and he does plan on endorsing Joe Biden. Now, this all started with Buttigieg saying that he's dropping out, and then a day later you have Amy Klobuchar saying she's dropping out, and it's become very clear that these Democratic candidates are helping Biden to solidify support for his candidacy so he wins the nomination against Bernie Sanders. Now, I do want to go to a lengthier video of Pete Buttigieg explaining his reasoning for why he decided to suspend his campaign. Let's take a look.
We have a responsibility to consider the effect of remaining in this race any further. Our goal has always been to help unify Americans to defeat Donald Trump and to win the era for our values. At this point in the race, the best way to keep faith with those goals and ideals is to step aside and help bring our party and our country together. So tonight, I am making the difficult decision to suspend my campaign for the presidency. I will no longer seek to be the 2020 Democratic nominee for president, but I will do everything in my power to ensure that we have a new Democratic president come January.
Unless it's Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. In that case, I will do everything it takes to prevent him from winning the nomination. Mm-hmm. And I say that because Buttigieg has been pretty candid about that. In fact, since Buttigieg has been critical of Bernie Sanders' campaign call for a democratic socialist national revolution, the mayor's withdrawal further suggests he hopes this will be a strategic retreat to help Biden instead of the Vermont senator. Mm-hmm. And so when he talks about unifying the party, he's not talking about Bernie Sanders or the individuals who support Bernie Sanders. He's specifically talking about the centrists who have run in this campaign, their supporters, and doing everything it takes to get all of those people to support Biden so he has a better shot at beating Bernie.
Yeah. And like we were saying earlier, that is true 100%. Also, though, his strategy was, I'm gonna raise a ton of money, I'm gonna try to win Iowa and New Hampshire, and then something. And that something didn't happen, so he should leave.
I mean, this is what politics in America is about, though. It's about name recognition, it's about planting a seed. This isn't the end of Mayor Pete. I'm sure he'll be around, unfortunately.
I think he's younger than me, at least. I'm gonna be gone before his presidential runs are gone.
That is so depressing.
So I'm in
John.
This for the long haul, especially the way I eat. I'm definitely gonna be gone before his presidential
runs are gone. Don't talk like that. No, but I can't stand the way Pete Buttigieg talks. Like, that's the thing that's really gotten under my skin about his candidacy. Just the fact that he never really says anything of substance when he's talking, but it's very uplifting. At least it sounds like it's uplifting, but then you pay attention, you're like, wait, what? What does that mean? What are you saying?
If you can, for whatever reason, sort of enter into a flow state where you're not actually consciously processing the words that are said to you, all of the words in some order are right. Mm-hmm. That's not the order. And there's nothing behind it.
There's nothing behind it, exactly. It lacks any and all substance. Now, Dana Bash on CNN was candid about what the real motivations are. We've been candid about it as well in noting how this is all about helping Biden to win the nomination. But here's what Dana Bash had to say. I want you to pay close attention to her wording here.
What Pete Buttigieg did was try to lead the way. He's saying, without using these words, I'm the guy who won Iowa. I came from nowhere with a name nobody could pronounce, with no national base, with no national and natural fundraising base. And look at how far I came. And yet I understand the reality of math. I don't see a path forward. And so the signal he is giving to others, including somebody with a lot of money, the deepest pockets in the world, Mike Bloomberg, is, okay, guys, it's time. Let's pull back. Now, he's not actually endorsing Joe Biden. I can tell you that there is a lot of encouragement, people begging him to do so from around Biden world, but he's making clear that it's time to consolidate.
So he's definitely making it clear that it's time to consolidate. And that video was before the Buttigieg campaign announced that it does plan on endorsing Biden.
Yeah. It makes sense. I would I get that she was trying to make a quick point about his rise. I would have added some context to his rise because it is amazing when you start to look at some of the reasons that he rose in the polls like he did. Less amazing perhaps because there's obviously a huge assist from the media there. The media just sort of thought, hey, isn't this fun? Like he's got this cool resume. Let's like talk about him a little bit. Mm-hmm. His record, I'm not so interested. I'm not interested in finding out about that. Oh, there's some potential scandals. What about the Norwegian thing? That was a big part of it, I think.
Oh, definitely. The media was propping him up. I think that what you're seeing with the moderate candidates and how the media covers them is that they're like in this scramble to find the person that could be the nominee, anyone who's not Bernie. Like that's the way. So at various points in this election, you've seen them prop up various moderates and their campaigns. It's certainly happened with Amy Klobuchar. Amy Klobuchar, that like blows my mind. No name recognition, nothing interesting about her. She keeps talking about the Midwest, while giving everyone else the middle finger. How does that unite the country? Mm-hmm. I don't really understand. I'm not saying the Midwest doesn't matter, but she was so hyper focused on one specific demographic. And she's a person who has no name recognition, no unique message, no unique campaign style. There was nothing there.
There were some mom jokes.
Her jokes were unbearable. Like it just—
A couple were okay.
On the debate stage, especially. I love when she thought they landed.
Yeah.
Oh,
we've all been there.
Of course, every day.
Exactly.
But like, I'm not running for president, so it's fine.
Not yet.
Never.
Yeah, that's true. And let's just point out that to some extent, the fact that 2019 was a series of, hey, isn't this shiny? Mm-hmm. Was first of all because the media gets bored, let's admit it. But I would say a far larger percentage is because Biden doesn't have that, you know, je ne sais quoi. Like the media was always like, whoa, he's winning in the polling, that's great. Let's not show his speech and let's not really dive into his platform and let's not do any of the things that we would do if we could be genuinely enthusiastic about him as a centrist alternative to Bernie Sanders, they would have done that. But it wasn't there. And they probably rightly suspected that the more time we leave the camera on Joe Biden, the more time he's gonna talk about swimming pools and corn pop and he's gonna, you know, say that he's running for Senate and he's gonna call people by the wrong name as we're gonna find. So you know what, let's talk about Buttigieg for a while. And then Kamala Harris got really big and then Warren got really big. And then hey, maybe Buttigieg again. And then oh, Klobuchar, she got third. And that's not the sort of thing you do when you are enthusiastic about your centrist sort of flag bearer.
And more importantly, if the number one goal of the Democratic Party really is what they claim it is, and that is to beat Donald Trump, wouldn't they, instead of fighting the will of voters and what voters want, instead of doing everything they can to destroy Bernie Sanders, wouldn't it make more sense to support him, especially when polls indicate that he's best suited to beat Donald Trump? Mm-hmm. Especially when and that's why I keep saying that it's disingenuous when they say that their number one goal is to beat Donald Trump. Because if it genuinely were, then they would not be so hyper focused and obsessed with defeating Bernie Sanders. They've been more aggressive against him than anyone else.
Oh, definitely. I to some extent disagree. Not with your read, you're 100% right. They should support Bernie Sanders, he does have the best chance. But at least with any of the others, the head-to-head polls are obviously much worse than Bernie Sanders. And so when they claim, like honestly, when Klobuchar goes on the debate stage and says, rally behind me because I can beat Donald Trump, it's like, okay, show me some data, anything, honestly. Elizabeth Warren, the same. Like I like her much more in the policies than Klobuchar, but her head-to-head polling is really bad. I agree with you that Biden's advantage right now in the head-to-head polling is less likely to stay than Bernie's.
Right.
But at least it's there. For once, the media at least has some sort of data. Now, when you go to the individual states that matter the most, then Bernie's advantage is far more obvious. If you're talking about Pennsylvania, Michigan, some of those other states, head-to-head polls there are much more favorable towards Bernie. But the media is never gonna do that much research. I'm just impressed that they've at least found like one national poll and they're going with that.
Those standards are super low.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
they're super low. And
by the way, and the difference between them seemingly on electability to the extent that they will look into it is enough within the margin of error that they're gonna go with the guy that they agree with far more.
Bernie Sanders threatens the power structures that we're currently living under. He threatens profits, he threatens the wealthy with higher taxes. He threatens their way of life, the elites, the powerful. And I would venture to say that those are the very people who claim they want to beat Trump, but when push comes to shove, I think they enjoy life under Trump way more than under a president who would not just redistribute money, right, but redistribute power. That's much more important than, you know, the monetary aspect of it. It means that you have a say in how this country is governed, in the decisions that are made. This is a people-powered campaign, and the elites hate it, which is why they're doing anything and everything to get a man who's likely to be beaten by Donald Trump to the general election. All right, well, we got to take a break. When we come back, we have more, including what Biden had to say about a contested convention. If Bernie Sanders has the most delegates but doesn't have the majority. And then later, we'll also talk about how churchgoers turned their backs to Mike Bloomberg. We'll give you the details on why when we return.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Welcome back to TYT, Anna and John with you. I want to read a few member comments and super chats. Third is the new first says, when will Cenk pay up his bet to Anna? Probably right after election day.
What's the bet?
So the bet is that he believed that Donald Trump would drop out before the election.
Yeah, he's had several versions of that bet.
So that's obviously not going to happen. I predicted that it wouldn't happen. I took the bet that it wouldn't happen. And so he is going to owe me $400.
Well, geez.
Which is going to be nice.
I think I had like a $10 bet with him once.
Ooh. We kept like increasing the stakes.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And I feel pretty good about it. So that's,
I hope you have that on paper.
Right. Let's look, ideal situation. I win the bet, so I earn $400. And then on top of that, Bernie Sanders is our new president. That would be like the happiest day of my life.
And then we buy $400 worth of champagne.
Oh, champagne for everybody. I'm totally using that money to buy everyone champagne. All right. So Warren, my Buttigieg and Biden, my time to burn, says, be careful at Politicon, John. It's a trap.
Yeah, obviously.
And
look, I've been very clear. I understand some people have fun with those things. I generally think debate in general between non-politicians, I think, is a waste of time. But I'm going to try to have some fun and we'll see how it goes.
I don't think it's necessarily a waste of time. I think that
I don't mean the podcast. I mean some of the debates that they set up. This podcast should be fun. It's conversational.
The debates are never about changing the mind of the person that you're having a debate with, but it does.
I find that to be a problem.
I think it does, but I don't. Look, when I debate someone like Tommy Lahren, I'm not looking to change her mind.
I know.
And I don't care about what she thinks, right? But I do care about, in real time, debunking her talking points, right?
I totally get it.
There's some portion of people who are reasonable and they'll be like, oh, is that true? I remember when I debated Ann Coulter and I brought up the fact that Donald Trump has hired a bunch of foreign workers after he got elected. Mm-hmm. He increased the number of foreign worker visas that can be given out, and then he applied for a bunch of them for his properties.
Yeah.
I mentioned that in my debate, and apparently there were TYT people in the audience, obviously, and they overheard a few of Ann Coulter supporters say, wait, is that true? So
okay, that's good.
It does good. Matter to some extent. It plants
You're
a seed.
You're the exception to the rule.
No, it's not just me. I think that if you are able to debunk their talking points, which I think is pretty easy to do, there are reasonable people out there. Not everyone is crazy. It's just think about the media that they're, you know, focusing on. If they're only watching Fox, if they're only watching conservative news, they're not getting the facts. So if you break through a little bit, give them a little bit of facts, and maybe they do a little more research, who knows? It could really change things. All right, Aspartame Daddy on Twitter says, Klobuchar must have had internal polling showing her losing Minnesota big to Bernie. Otherwise, she would have stayed in through tomorrow and then give the delegates to Biden. I don't know.
Maybe.
I think she was in denial for a while, but I mean, every article that I read about her dropping out today mentioned how like, oh, she experienced a real surge in New Hampshire where she was a third.
Yeah, I don't know. It can be possible, but I will say, like, theories that attempt to explain a bunch of political events sometimes can get a little bit too simplistic and a little bit too cute. Mm-hmm. Like, these are all incredibly self-centered. People are full of themselves and very worried about their career. And like, theories are all too often willing to be like, a person at the DNC told this person, and this person to totally suspend all of their ambitions to do exactly what one other person wants them to do. Okay, maybe, but all of those people have their own interests, so sometimes it can be a little bit too clean.
Sure, they all have their own interests, but I think that they get coerced by the party quite often. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of backroom deals that happen, and
yeah, I'm just saying those are not simple backroom
deals. No, they're not. And there are conversations happening, deals being made that we're not privy to, but I don't trust anyone, and neither should you. The only person you should trust is someone who has an incredibly consistent record, who hasn't deviated from that record, and that is Bernie Sanders. So let's move on to the rest of the news. I guess I'm a little biased, but maybe if you look at the records, you can tell that there's one person in this race that isn't just simply a self-interested egomaniac, and that again is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I heard he's not even a Democrat.
I love all the media pundits who are like, yeah, Bernie's not even a Democrat. He's a registered independent in Vermont. And then Bloomberg comes around, they're like, oh, Bloomberg, I love Bloomberg. Isn't Bloomberg so great?
I just once want to see someone actually do that dance while talking about Bloomberg.
Anyway, let's go to the rest of the news. So, following his primary win in South Carolina, Joe Biden made it clear that he would push for a contested convention if Bernie Sanders leads in the number of delegates, but does not have the 1,991 pledged delegates necessary to win the majority. Now, he spoke about this a little bit during a recent interview. Here's what he had to say.
If no candidate has the required 1,991 delegates to be the Democratic nominee, are you going to fight for the nomination even if you are in second place in delegates?
Yes, I mean, look, the rules have been set. And I find a lot of folks in Bernie's operation are now saying that whoever goes in with the most delegates, even if they're not close or there's a distance from the 19 plus 100 that we need, they should be declared the winner. I wonder where that view was when he was challenging Hillary after she went in with a commanding lead. Look, you don't change the rules in the middle of the game. And I'm not at all certain that we're right. I'm not a pundit. I don't know that we're going to win with Bernie ahead. I hope that's not the case. I hope I'm ahead, but we'll see. But I think, you know, you play by the rules.
Okay, so I keep hearing this talking point often. This talking point about how, well, look, Bernie's just trying to change the rules now because he has the advantage. It's likely that he's going to have a plurality of pledged delegates here, but this isn't what he was saying back in 2016. And so Bernie actually did respond to that. And I'm gonna skip ahead for everyone in the control room. I'm gonna go to the video where Bernie responds, that's C3. And here he is talking about this incredibly important distinction that everyone in the media and all these corporate Democrats seem to forget. Take a look.
Are you and your supporters have said the candidate with the most pledged delegates going into the convention should be the nominee? That's a pretty clear contrast with the position you took 4 years ago. Here you are in May 2016.
No. I hope that we will win the pledged delegates. But at the end of the day, the responsibility that superdelegates have is to decide what is best for this country and what is best for the Democratic Party. And if those superdelegates conclude That Bernie Sanders is the best candidate, the strongest candidate to defeat Trump and anybody else, yes, I would very much welcome their support.
If that argument was correct then, why isn't it correct now?
George, that was in May. California, the last primary was in June. And what I said is, at that point, if I can create momentum, and if we win the California primary, then I think superdelegates might want to rethink where we're at. That was before the end of the process. What you're asking me now is if at the end of the entire Democratic process, a candidate, maybe Bernie Sanders, ends up with more votes than anybody else, and we go into the convention, and the Democratic establishment and the superdelegates say, hey, yeah, Bernie won more votes than anybody else. He won state after state after state, but we don't want him. Do you know what that will do to the Democratic base in this country?
I think he makes a great point there. And it does remind me of what happened at the Democratic National Convention in 2016, where there were Bernie supporters who protested. They were angry because of the emails that were leaked, the Podesta emails that were leaked, the Hillary Clinton emails that were leaked that indicated the DNC was very much in cahoots with Clinton's campaign in an effort to beat Bernie Sanders. And so this type of, anyway, I want to get your thoughts. And then there's one other clip I want to get to with Biden claiming that Bernie would not win against Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's fine. So, the frustrating thing, look, I get they've got that bit of video. I've seen multiple times when Bernie was talking about what the superdelegates should do, where he was very clear that he mainly means that in states where there was an overwhelming leader, they should support the person who won the popular vote there.
Exactly.
I think that is a fine position to have, because what it effectively does is it takes an undemocratic system, the superdelegates, and makes it more democratic. I have a far simpler one. Get rid of all of them.
Right.
Get rid of all the superdelegates. We should all be able to agree on that. Joe Biden never would, absolutely not, whether he was in the race or not. That's the sort of system. Like,
can you elaborate on why Joe Biden would never do it? Because I think it's important to talk about the common political ideology shared by superdelegates.
Yeah, well, look, I think inside of this race he would never do it, because he can say, you know, I hope to be the one who has the plurality, but he doesn't believe that's gonna happen. It's a loser mentality. He wants to be saved at the last minute, a deus ex machina via party, effectively, with the superdelegates. But in terms of him as sort of a senior member of the Democratic Party, they love the idea that they are always going to be more individually valuable than tens or hundreds of thousands of voters. They want the idea, at least, if not the reality, that they could come in and decide when all these stupid, naive voters have gotten done, and they'll save them from their own worst instincts. It is an inherently undemocratic, I would say leaning towards autocratic view, or at least aristocratic view, of how government should function. And all of those superdelegates, by participating in it, especially saying that at the end of the day, they can just throw it to whoever they want, that is the stance that they have. And Joe Biden is 100% that. That's why I say even if he wasn't in this race, he would not support taking out the superdelegates. And finally, and you did basically make this point, but it is really cute to say, you know, you don't change the rules halfway through after you have set up the rules. Not him individually, but the part of the party that he represents.
Yes.
They wanted this. We tried to get rid of all the superdelegates. Bernie didn't want the superdelegates. These are not the rules that he wanted.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. So I want to read a few comments from our members section. Members help this show, you keep us sustainable. If you want to become a member and support TYT, you can go to tyt.com/join. Gabby Marita writes in and says, let's not kid ourselves. Establishment Democrats will try to contest the convention even if Bernie does have an outright majority of delegates. They see him as a greater existential threat than Trump. We need to fight like he's 20 points down. Look, that last line, I agree with the entire
last line.
But the last line is excellent, because even when Bernie has a solid lead, you can't get complacent. And you need to expect the unexpected, especially when it comes to some of these bad faith actors, bad faith attacks against Sanders, the dirty tricks that occur. I mean, we've seen some of these dirty tricks in some congressional races, like in California, for instance. And so you need to be careful and not get overconfident.
Yeah.
But at the same time, don't allow corporate Democrats to discourage you, right? Because I think that that's what they want. They want you to feel defeated. They want you to feel like you have no power. This political activism that we're seeing alongside Bernie's campaign has been incredibly powerful. And they've done everything and anything to intimidate people from participating in their political activism, you know, with the Bernie bros attacks and all this nonsense. No, we know what they're capable of, and we know what kind of damage they actually do to people's lives when they want to make a difference in this country. Don't let them intimidate you. Don't let them discourage you. You got to keep fighting, and you got to fight like hell. Now let's go to this last video of Biden. It was in the same interview with Jake Tapper. And so he talks about Bernie's electability. Let's take a look.
You think that Bernie Sanders can't beat President Trump. Why do you think that you will be able to beat him, given the fact that Bernie does have more enthusiasm among young people and among some other minority groups, not in South Carolina, obviously, but nationally?
Well, let me put it this way. I think that enthusiasm does not necessarily translate into votes. You saw more people voted yesterday in South Carolina, I'm told, than I think in the primary than any other time, the largest turnout. And, you know, I won every single solitary county, every single solitary county. Doesn't mean that that holds for every state. But, you know, I think people aren't looking for a revolution. They're looking for results.
No, people are looking for a revolution. The people that he's in his circles with are not looking for a revolution because, hey, things are working out pretty well for them, right?
Maybe they're looking for a revolution because they think at this point that's the only way they're gonna see results, maybe. And also, I love him saying, you know, it doesn't mean it's gonna hold for every state. Well, I'd think so since you lost the first three.
No, but that's the amazing thing. I get it. He won big in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. That is one state. That is one state. That's it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So moving forward, I'm curious to see how his campaign does, considering that Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg have dropped out. So I think it's going to help him, but I don't know to what extent. But to say that the enthusiasm, on one hand, you have corporate Democrats arguing that there's too much enthusiasm among Bernie supporters, that they're too enthusiastic online. They're Bernie bros. They're abusive with their enthusiasm, right? And then on the other hand, they're like, yeah, that enthusiasm doesn't mean anything. He's not electable. He would totally lose to Trump. Make up your mind, right? So which one is it? And there, what happened in Nevada was incredible. I mean, you have people who were not registered voters literally registering to vote for Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. So to minimize that and pretend like it doesn't matter, I think is so ridiculous.
Yeah. And how about someday we do a little experiment where we bring the most boring, unenthusiastic candidate ever, we try that. How about we don't do that in the election right after we did that in 2016?
Right.
How about that? And honestly,
they can't help themselves.
Look, I'm gonna say, obviously, I have issues with Hillary Clinton, up to and including right now. I would argue while Hillary Clinton has more sort of like detractors, like Republicans hate Hillary more than they hate Joe Biden. Hillary does at least have some people that like her, that have followed her career for literally decades.
Yeah, like Neera Tanden, who wants to make money off of her.
No. There are some, there is a demographic. I won't go too specific into it, but there are people who have liked Hillary Clinton for literally decades. I don't think Joe Biden has even that. No one's been pulling for Biden since the 90s.
I don't know.
Hillary had the Pumas. Who are the Boomas? I don't think they exist. That's not how the acronym works, but I don't think they exist at all. Who's enthusiastic for Joe Biden?
Yeah, I don't know.
Hillary at least said she was gonna shatter the glass ceiling. Biden's gonna, he's gonna like skip off the glass and punch himself in the face, which he looked like he did in that clip.
Yeah, he was looking like he was struggling in that clip, which is kind of ironic considering how he's attacking the electability of someone who's sharper, more interesting, you know, has a far more diverse coalition, like
better complected.
I don't want to go that far, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I feel bad saying it. Anyway, but my point is, these attacks make no sense. And remember, Joe Biden's own wife said in an interview, yeah, I know it's like policies don't excite people, but like, he's best suited to beat Trump. He's the most electable. And they haven't provided any evidence for that at all. Right? So if they say, well, polling indicates it, well, polling also indicates that Bernie has a better chance at beating Trump. So all of this nonsense is so frustrating, but we gotta fight like hell and we gotta get the right Democrat elected. The primaries matter more than the general, because once you're at the general, if you don't get the right person to represent you and your best interest, then you're stuck with the situation of voting for the lesser of two evils. So let's not let it get to that point and get the right person in, and that person's Bernie Sanders. All right, we got to take a break. Let's do that. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about how Mike Bloomberg got snubbed at a church because he's a terrible human being.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
Be right back.
We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at tyt.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment.
Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. Anna and John with you. You know what? It's pretty good to be back. I gotta say, it's really nice to be back. And I love John. I love doing the show with him. All right, so let me give you some member comments and then I wanna make a quick announcement. So Stephmont12 says, Bernie's rally here in Utah today is amazing. By the way, you went to a Bernie rally over the weekend.
Did.
My brother was upset about it.
Edwin and I were.
not because my brother's political in any way. He's in a completely different world from me. But he had a special project that was happening near Bernie's rally yesterday. And in order for this project to come to fruition, people need to get there and people couldn't get there because of all the traffic and
all the
commotion. Because of all that enthusiasm, right?
Exactly.
The enthusiasm that doesn't somehow translate to electability, yeah, according to Biden. But I'm excited. Look, this is the kind of stuff that excites me. Like the Bernie community, how enthusiastic it is, how large it is,
yeah,
and how these rallies have been like totally killing it.
Yeah, whereas Biden hasn't even been campaigning in California, but is rising in the polls, so that's cool. He doesn't give a damn about the state. It's not worth his time or his money. They don't set up offices, but maybe he's at 20% now. It's cool.
Well, let me read a few more member comments. And you can become a member by going to tyt.com/join. My tinfoil hat, who's been writing in a lot lately, I enjoy your comments, says, was Biden stirred from a deep slumber in the middle of that interview? The last clip that we showed.
I'm not gonna say anything.
Don't say negative things about people's looks. But yeah, he did seem like.
General. Yes, I know that in general terms. It was a long weekend.
Paddle Left says, I like how it's never mentioned on corporate media that a Democratic superdelegate gave huge amounts of money to Republicans and is a big pharmaceutical lobbyist. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think
we did.
Yes, but corporate media doesn't usually do that. All right, and a few TYT lives. Lauren says Hillary Clinton was under FBI investigation in 2016. That is true. And then the math magician says, Anna, if the establishment goes ahead with robbing Bernie of this convention or the convention, it's going to be far, far worse than 2016. Google the Democratic convention in 1952, where Mayor Boss Daley sent his brown shirts to cripple rioters against the establishment pick.
Well, don't worry, because this time we're the brown shirts, I hear on MSNBC.
Ooh, we have an MSNBC story later in the show that you do not want to miss. But in the meantime, let's talk a little bit about Bloomberg. So, a group of churchgoers turned their backs to Mike Bloomberg as he addressed them at a historic church known as the Brown Chapel AME Church in Selma. Now, there was a group of at least 9 people who took part in this protest as Bloomberg spoke during a 55th commemoration of Bloody Sunday. Of course, this is the historic civil rights march in 1965, where 17 people were injured by police during their march to Montgomery, Alabama, to demand the right to vote for black people. Now, remember, Mayor Bloomberg, or former Mayor Bloomberg, does not have a great record when it comes to the African-American community or the Latino community. His stop and frisk policy was basically giving cops in New York City free rein to harass people of color, specifically men of color. And then later, he blamed minorities for collapsing the economy in 2008 when they were the ones who were victimized by predatory loans. So there's good reason to be upset with Mike Bloomberg. And so I want to show you what that scene looked like, and then I'll give you some more details about what happened that day.
Back in 1921, more than 200, it was just another instance of black families being systematically robbed and exploited. Kennedy Press was the call to action, and that's what our Greenwood Initiative resolved to do. And we're going to do it by achieving three things. One, we're going to help a million more black families own a home. Two, we're going to double the amount of black families.
Okay, so you can see from that video, it's a small group of the church patrons who turned their backs to him. Some did applaud for what he was saying. But something really interesting in reading about this event and how he was introduced, and the way he dealt with an invitation to speak at this event. Mm-hmm. So in first introducing Bloomberg, the Reverend Strong told the group that when he first invited Bloomberg to Brown Chapel, Bloomberg told him, quote, "I've got to beat Donald Trump. I don't have time to go to Brown Chapel." Wow.
And if we're truly cursed, in 6 months he'll be saying, "I've got to beat Donald Trump. I don't have time to go to Wisconsin."
So Strong, Reverend Strong, said he threw away the paper he had with Bloomberg's information, disappointed. But Strong told the group, meaning the patrons of the church, some of Bloomberg's people reached out. And after thinking about it, I thought it was important for Mayor Bloomberg on his journey, wherever he ends up, that before he gets there and on his way there, it is important that he has the opportunity to listen and to learn from people like you and you and me and this one. And then a Bloomberg aide was quoted as saying this: "Mike sat through the whole service from start to finish. Takes courage to show up." What?
How scary is this church?
That is an unbelievable statement. Uh-huh. That, I guess that's what happens when you pay people to support you. Uh-huh. Like when you pay people to work on your campaign, but maybe they don't even believe in your message at all. Like, how is that an okay statement to make? It takes courage to sit through a church service that's commemorating something incredibly historical and relevant to, by the way, very relevant today when you consider voter suppression.
Yeah.
That disproportionately impacts black communities throughout this country.
Can't you just imagine him like he's like in the bathroom getting ready to go, and he's like, "You can do this, come on, get out there, get out there. I know you're scared, but you can do it, get out there, it's our charge."
This takes courage, it really does, it takes courage, but I know you have it, Mike, I know you have it.
The thing is, like, so that he took what could have just been a fairly positive thing. Yes, some people turn their backs, but he got clapped. Like, people were clapping for the things he said, and now he had to totally torpedo it by being a D-bag before and implying that they're not worth his time. But honestly, that's the most honest that he can be.
Yeah.
That is actually what he thinks of most people, that they are not worth his time, that he's a big billionaire and he's got to go spend his money and like going and talking to people. What's the point of that? He's demonstrated that throughout the campaign. He doesn't value that sort of thing.
That's true. And it's amazing how after his campaign clearly had to persuade him to be part of this event, they then turn around and they give a statement like that. It takes real courage to sit through this entire service.
Yeah.
He's in a historical church. Like, yeah. There's no courage. It's an honor to be there, and it's an honor to be invited to speak there. And the fact that he treated it this way is just gross.
Yeah. The important thing for Bloomberg, though, is that you not get down about that experience and the negative press that you might be getting. It is important for you because you're a very unique person who brings something very unique to this race, that you stick with this thing and that you compete vigorously on Super Tuesday and you run a bunch of ads about how you're the only centrist alternative to Bernie Sanders. Run them far and wide, and then I don't care what happens to you after that. But do that on Super Tuesday, that's important. Don't go and everyone's saying you should drop out and endorse someone. I don't know who. Don't listen to them. You're a very special person. Run that race.
I want to see more big gay ice cream commercials.
That was the high point.
It really was.
The low point? Dog snout grab. I will never forgive him for that.
All right. Well, since we spoke about voter suppression, I think it only makes sense to give you some details on what's happening with voter suppression in Texas. So let's get to that story. Texas has closed hundreds of polling sites throughout the state that would make it much more difficult for minorities to vote. And this is a huge problem when you consider how this type of voter suppression is not only happening in Texas, but it is happening throughout the country. The numbers in Texas, though, are stark. 50 counties that gained more or gained the most Black and Latinx residents between 2012 and 2018 closed 542 polling sites compared to just 34 closures in the 50 counties that have gained the fewest Black and Latinx residents. This is despite the fact that the population in the former group of counties has risen by 2.5 million people, whereas in the latter category, the total population has fallen by over 13,000 people. I want to remind you all of what the Supreme Court did about 7 years ago. They scrapped the Voting Rights Act. The Voting Rights Act made it so there was some accountability when there were changes in states pertaining to elections. If they wanted to close polling sites, if they wanted to make changes on how voting occurs in any given state, the whole point was that leaders in that state would have to clear it with the Department of Justice to ensure that people's rights were not being violated, that voters' rights were not being suppressed. But when the Supreme Court gutted that law about 7 years ago, that gave free rein to bad actors throughout the country, and voter suppression is alive and well. And Texas is a perfect example of that. A few more statistics for you, and then John, I want you to jump in. McLennan County, home to Waco, Texas, closed 44% of its polling places from 2012 to 2018, despite the fact that its population grew by more than 15,000 people during the same time period, with more than 2/3 of that growth coming from Black and Latinx residents. In 2012, there was one polling place for every 4,000 residents. By 2018, that figure had dropped to one polling place per 7,700 residents, so nearly double. It's just so incredibly gross. And why is this happening? Why is it disproportionately impacting minority voters? Gee, I wonder why. And Texas is still, for some, thought of as a red state. But if you look at the demographics, it has really become a swing state. And so Republicans have—
hypothetically, if people can vote.
No, not even hypothetically, in reality. But Republicans, conservatives, they have been fighting aggressively to rig this system to their advantage, in their favor, and make it increasingly difficult for minorities who usually, not always, but usually vote Democratic, suppress their right to vote.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying, yeah, hypothetically, when you look at just the demographics, but when you combine that with actual access to vote, it goes to the point that you continually say, which is, you love the idea that we live in a democracy. It would be cooler if we had that reality. And those sorts of graphics, like, we do stories like that once every 3 weeks, once a month, once every 5 weeks, something like that. We flash it up there, and every reasonable person looks at that and says, this is absolutely absurd. How could this possibly be allowed to continue? And it is allowed to continue.
Yep.
And that isn't even as bad as some of the voter suppression, like Georgia in 2018, absolutely insane. Like they again, the same thing, the racially discriminatory closure of polling places. And then you know what, that's not good enough. So let's just eliminate 500,000 people from the voter rolls to begin with. So if they can actually make it through the line, they'll find that they can't actually vote when they get to the front of it. It's insane that it's allowed to continue. It's insane that it isn't what the Democrats are running on right now. That the concept of democracy, the ability for you to actually get what you want, hypothetically, like that if you were to actually vote, hypothetically that can be translated into some actual outcome, is like a tertiary concern. Like, we'll talk about it every once. How many questions have the debates have been about that?
None.
CNN doesn't have access to those stats?
It's never been addressed in a debate. I mean, maybe
it's
I'm
absurd.
Wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it has been once, but it's never a prominent feature in a debate. It's never a prominent story in these corporate media outlets. And it's a problem because we keep pretending like we live in a democracy, and I'm tired of people pretending. I mean, I never pretended. There was a point in my life where I was misinformed about the nature of how elections work, but it's become clearer and clearer each passing year that the elites want to take control of the system and rig it to their advantage. And more importantly, with gerrymandering, with voter suppression, conservatives in this country want to throw elections in their favor because they don't have ideas that actually resonate with the mass, electorate. They just, the electorate right now, while politicians keep pretending like our economy is doing great, we're all happy, everything's wonderful, everything is recovered since 2008. Talk to average Americans and ask them how much debt they have. Talk to average Americans and ask them how many jobs they need in order to make ends meet and put food on the table for their families.
Yeah.
You know, the facts on the ground are very different from what you hear in the corporate media or among these politicians.
Yeah.
Just a few more statistics, because this is an important story. I don't wanna miss any part of it. So there was also a paper written last year, 2019, by the University of Houston political scientists, and they found that after the counties transitioned to vote centers, more voting locations were closed in Latinx neighborhoods than in non-Latinx neighborhoods, and that Latinx people had to travel farther to vote than non-Hispanic whites. Why is that relevant? The farther that an individual has to travel in order to vote, the less likely it is that that person will vote. Because voting takes time, it takes resources. If you need to travel further, that means that you need transportation, you need money, you know, if you don't have public transportation in that area and you don't have a car, you're completely screwed. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, most people, and this affects a larger percentage of Americans, most people don't have flexible work hours. And it takes time to go vote. Yeah. So if you're voting in the middle of the work week, I mean, you don't know how long that line is gonna be. I did early voting this weekend, and I'm so glad I did, because tomorrow, we're in California, obviously. Tomorrow's gonna be crazy with all the work that we need to do and all, you know, the special coverage we wanna provide you guys.
Yeah.
And the line was long. I spent like 30 minutes there.
Really?
Yeah, it was really, but I was also really happy and excited because it's a Sunday, you know, people wanna be with their families or just like hang out and have a good time. And to see like that enthusiasm polls was great.
You want to, let's do something fun for just a second.
Sure.
Let's combine two stories that we've talked about.
Okay.
So we're gonna construct a little political equation for you. On the right side, it's equals the chance that you're gonna vote. Okay, so on the left side, we have a whole bunch of variables, like whether you get time off to vote, how far it is for you to go vote, access to public transportation. If you don't have a car, do you actually have a car? And so I think a really important variable that we can put on the side of that is your level of enthusiasm for the candidate. If it's gonna be difficult, if it's gonna be increasingly difficult to vote, then by God, you want the most exciting person imaginable. You don't want a person to be like, to get to the polling place, okay? They've got a boring, boring candidate, but they went all the way to the polling place, and they look at that line and they think, an hour, really? An hour for Biden? Am I gonna, and 2 hours? Am I gonna stand 3 hours for Biden? No. No, and what percent will drop off? 1%, 5%? Can we afford that? I don't think we can.
Nope, I don't think we can either. So if you genuinely care about beating Donald Trump, and we certainly do, you do want someone who's people are enthusiastic about, someone who has a message that is consistent, clear, and really speaks to the majority of Americans, both on the right and the left, and that's Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've ended almost every story with, and that's Bernie Sanders today. but that's just the truth, sorry. All right, we gotta take a quick break. When we come back, we have more for you, including, let's see, what's the next story? We gotta give you some updates on what's happening with the coronavirus. I know that it's being talked about 24/7 in the corporate media, but I actually wanna talk about the impact of the coronavirus in the United States, where we do not have affordable universal health care. It's been a disaster for people already. I'll give you the details on that and more when we return.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.